BMX and motocross jumping, things which you've probably all done on a very weekly basis, or just actually crossing the road out here. But there is a series of extreme things that we may or may not get involved in. And these aren't isolated phenomena. It's because they are more than just symptoms. It seems that actually people are seeking for some sort of extreme, because it gives us a rush. It actually helps us to live life in quite an artificial way in some ways. That also is true of us as Christians. Romans 12, verse 1 says, "Therefore I urge brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship." So what does true and proper worship look like? Does extreme worship mean that we've got to go out and buy some sort of helmet and elbow pads in order to actually be able to take part in what worship really looks like? Well, no, not really. But actually, you do see it. You do see it within churches. People going for one extreme worship. What it does, it gives you a buzz. It gives you a gives you an emotional and a spiritual buzz, which puts you on a high, and then you seek for another high, and another high, and another high. And as the rush dies down, you move on to something else. It's the ultimate in consumerism when it comes to Christianity and faith. Because we go shopping around for the next best thing. But a worship leader, you were very good, Ali, by the way, thank you very much. Maybe a better worship leader, or a different way of doing it, better smoke machines, whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. But actually, is that what we look for? And I think the answer is sometimes yes, but how does that fit in with what actually extreme worship of our own lives should look like? And that's the other problem is, of course, because we use the word worship and we tend to think it's all about singing and playing a guitar, and actually worship is the way that we live our lives. And today's passage helps us to understand this. This very simple, very moving passage helps us to understand what worship looks like from an extreme perspective. And I'll explain why I've used the word extreme a bit later on. So this, let me put it where it's in its position. This is quite an apt passage. So it was a week before Jesus was crucified. He'd just come back from his preaching tour in John 11 and 12. He was visiting Bethany, a place which is just a couple of miles outside Jerusalem. And there was Lazarus and his two sisters in the house of Simon the leper. Jesus and his friends were invited to a meal. And that's the story, that's the setting for what we have. This is not unusual. This is not extreme worship. This is just dinner with friends. And then comes Mary. Now, in this passage, in John's passage, he tells us who it is. In the other passages that are mentioned, in Matthew and Mark, it doesn't. It just says it's a woman. But here we know it's the sister of Lazarus and Martha. And she is moved. She is moved, and she does extreme worship, an act of extreme worship. Jesus says that later on that wherever the gospel is preached, what she did would be remembered forever. So what does actually this look like? I think the first thing we have to understand is that extreme worship is often misunderstood, but it is never a mistake. Mary was misunderstood. She was at Jesus' feet, but it was not a mistake. But she was definitely misunderstood by the people around her. This perfume that Mary used was not common. It was an oil from a perfume of a herb that grew in the Himalayas. Now, if you know your geography, that's quite a long way. It's sort of somewhere around India or Tibet was where it was actually created. And it tells us it's pure nard. And in fact, in Matthew and Mark, it tells us that it was in a bottle of alabaster. So actually, this is also something which is worth a lot of money and would come from that area. It was incredibly valuable. it would have actually been worth a year's wages, as you can probably tell, because somebody said that. Judas says that. It is worth a year's wages. But what does her act tell us about it? What is that all about? Well, the thing is that I can see Mary pouring this vial over Jesus' feet, and then she anoints him. Didn't bring a towel, but she used her hair. And a woman in that culture letting down her hair, because it would have been tied up, was seen as complete no-no. Women just didn't do that. She wipes his feet with her hair. She pours out a year's worth of wages. And she also poured out for Jesus at that point her dignity and her pride and gave it all to him and said, I am a mess for you. I am going to go against every convention there is in order to actually worship you. All the things which you expect me to do, I'm not going to do. I'm going to pour it out for you. It was her doing. It was not a mistake. She wasn't caught up with the moment, but actually it was completely misunderstood, particularly by Judas, the materialistic thief, who later betrayed Jesus. And actually, he complained about her worship. He didn't understand it. Her extreme worship to him was complete waste. And he says so. Why is this done? I think sometimes we can do that. We can see other people's worship, the way other people live their lives, other forms of worship, and we might think it's a bit extreme, it's a bit odd. And actually, it's not. It's just an individual's extravagant worship, whatever that looks like. But actually, Jesus says this is not a mistake. Somebody once said, if all the Judases were to become the Marys in the church, we wouldn't have any poor. Because we wouldn't stop saying, well, how much is this going to cost us? To saying, well, let's just do it. Judas didn't care about the poor. He cared about the money. He cared about the world. And that is what ultimately led him to actually betray Jesus. She was here worshipping the Creator. She was worshipping God. This was not a mistake. But it was misunderstood. So what's the second one? I think it's a fact that actually we can also see within this within the Bible that this isn't an unusual, because actually this type of worship was often done. Solomon spent a fortune on building the temple to worship God. So if the first act is that it's often misunderstood, but never a mistake, the second one is, though it is never enough, it will always be accepted by Jesus. This is a characteristic of extreme worship, which looks like a bit of a negative one, but in fact is quite beautiful in some ways. Do you realize here that Mary's worship was not enough? Did she hope to repay Jesus? He'd raised her brother from the dead. She had also seemed to understand that Jesus would be dying for her. What's that worth? Could that be worth a year's wages? She knew it wasn't enough. She knew it wasn't enough. That the gift of her brother back could not be paid with a year's wages. But God, Jesus, accepted that. God knew that it wasn't enough. He gave it to her in the first place. Because if you think about it, God caused the plants to grow, which produce the oil. God actually placed the alabaster in the ground. God gave Mary her hair. But actually, it was Mary who gave it back to God. It doesn't matter how extravagant our worship is, it never comes close to what he deserves. Mary completely wasting this money was an extreme act that was not enough. But she knew it was not enough. It was just her act of worship. What does extreme worship look like in terms of God? Well, the Psalms particularly speak of that, I think. It talks continually in Psalms. So Psalm 145 says, I will exalt you, my God and my King. I will praise your name forever. Every day I will praise you. I will extol your name forever. How do we march up on that one, personally? I will praise your name forever and ever. Is that what we do every day? So we get up in the morning and we say, God, thank you so much for a wonderful day. And when you go to bed and you've had a really rubbish day, you say, thank you, Lord, for that day. That was just truly hideous. Or do we not? And do we praise his name every day to the people we meet? Does our lives sing of Jesus? The psalmists said, this is what worship is. This is what a worshiping life is. No matter how extravagant our worship is, it's never enough. Now, Jesus didn't say that about Mary's worship. He didn't say, thank you, that was a nice offering, but it's not enough. He knew it was her best. He knew it was everything to her. It was what she had to offer. And because it was her best, he honors her. He accepts it. He didn't stop her. He didn't embarrass her. He didn't look embarrassed. But actually, he accepted it. What did he say? He said it at the end. Sorry, wrong page. That's why I can't find it. Doesn't make any sense, that bit. He said, verse 7, leave her alone, Jesus said. It was intended that she would save this perfume for the day of my burial. You always had the poor among you. You will not have me with you. He told people to leave her alone. And later on, and one of the other accounts of this, he says, what you did will be remembered forever. He understood this was not enough. But actually, it was the best she had to offer. I think one more thing we can learn from this passage about worship and about extreme worship. Though it can never be taken back, once you've done something, it can't be taken back. It's never a waste. Mary had an alabaster jar, not Tupperware. Once it was open, you can't reseal it. It was broken. It could never be recovered. That was okay, because that was her offering. And God always uses broken things to bring about his glory. We're heading towards Easter, where we remember a body broken on a cross to bring God's glory. A curtain torn in two. To give us access to God. And here we see worship, which is about breaking things in order that Jesus could be lifted up. Mary didn't say, well, we'll wait and see if it's worth it. If you notice, she didn't pour a little bit on Jesus and rub it into his feet and say, is that enough? How's that feel? Skin feel nicer now? She poured the whole lot. She gave it all to him. And those who moaned and said it's a waste were told to leave her alone. Her pouring out, her giving back, giving out was never a waste. Even though it appeared to be a waste, it was never a waste. He said it prepared him for his burial. Can you imagine the fragrance that would have carried him around for the next week? Because in the particular culture, baths were not common. Very Roman thing to do. You might have a bit of a wash, but that was about it, really. So the smell of this fragrance would have held on his clothes and would have been in his hair and would have been on his skin throughout all the difficult times that he was going to come up with. I'd never thought of that before till I read it this week. And I thought that was an amazing thing, that this act of worship by this woman would follow Jesus for the next week through some of the hardest times. Times when everybody abandoned him. And he would have smelt the gift, the extravagant worship, the extreme worship of this one woman. And it will be remembered forever. She didn't regret anything. There's not a sort of subtext at the back of this. There's not a little note at the bottom which says, "And Mary regretted this mistake to her dying day because she blew a year's worth of money." It's something that she did that nobody could ever take away from her. And 2,000 years later, we're still talking about it. We should be so generous. We should live a life like that. Why did I call extreme worship? Because extreme can be criticized. When you do something that's extreme, people say, "Oh, well, that's just ridiculous. That's just dangerous. That's just silly. That's just a waste." And what Mary did here was extreme. If you had dinner at your house and somebody came in and one of your members of your family came into your guests and poured expensive oil over their feet and over their hair and wiped it with their tears, we wouldn't necessarily say, well, that's just exuberant welcome. We'd say that's quite extreme. She was extreme in her worship. It is often misunderstood, but it is never a mistake. It is something which seems to be a complete waste, but it's not. And you can't take it back when you've given it. The challenge for all of us in this is, what's our worship like? And I don't mean joining in and singing in songs. I mean, what's our lives like? Because Mary's offering was an offering to Jesus. She was pouring herself out for him, to anoint him for his death, to almost give praise to what he was going to do. Now, he's done that, and he's raised again from the dead, and we know he's alive. So we're at the other end, and we can look back and say, actually, my worship isn't to do with anointing him and preparing him for something. It's actually out of a response of my life. The big question is, how does your life worship Jesus? How do you worship Jesus at work, at home, at college, with your friends, with your family, with people you meet on the street, the people you live next door to? How do we show our extreme worship of God? Or is that slightly too uncomfortable for us? Because we don't want to be branded as some nut job Christian who all they do is talk about Jesus. So what we do is we take the extreme bit and we make it smaller. And we say, well, actually, my favourite one is, well, they'll know that I'm a Christian by the way I act. My big answer to that is, really? Sort of, and so actually, we have to be extreme in our worship. She poured herself out for him. Do we pour ourselves out for Jesus every day in the places that we are? Or do we keep the bottle tightly shut, a bit like the Tupperware container? We're less of an alabaster jar and more of a Tupperware container. Or we put a little bit out there and then we seal it back up again. Well, that's enough till next week. Because we're frightened of what the extreme worship will create, what the reaction will be. Mary didn't care. She didn't care for her reputation. She didn't care for her financial position. She didn't care about the attitudes of the people around her. She didn't care about her standing in society. She just did it. Do we care? Or do we care too much? That we would find extreme worship of Jesus in the places that we live and the places we work too hard. Because the cost is far too high. If so, we need to be challenged by this passage and by this simple act of one woman who just wanted to know Jesus better, to give him thanks and praise for what he was going to do, and to give him a gift of worship that was never enough. Ali, could you come back and could you play Unbroken Praise again? Don't worry, I wasn't going to throw a completely new song on you. That would have been... Unless you had one. Okay. And during that, if we could just reflect over what God is challenging us about. Because for all of us, this idea of actually being extreme in our worship on a daily basis for him, unless you are completely extreme currently, and then the big question is, how could you be more extreme? Is actually it's a big challenge for all of us. What does this look like tomorrow? What does this look like with my friends and with my family? And particularly picture the people for whom actually you find it very difficult to talk about Jesus with. The people who know you the best. The people who will turn around and say, well, isn't this a waste? Haven't you just gone nuts now? Isn't faith just about church? So what is God saying to us tonight?